Brisbane, Australia. This is episode 31 of The Normal Blokes, a podcast dedicated to improving the competitive 40K experience. I'm Denith, and today we're joined by Jordan. And Liam.
I am the experience.
All right, so a shorter episode today. Unfortunately, Luke can't join us because he has plans with his partner, which isn't 40K. And we'll be doing a short segment on list design and I guess accommodating for your local meta and choices between different units if you're confused between, you know, or, you know, wondering between, you know, certain units to take. Personally, you know, for me, if I'm designing any army, I'll have, a pool of things to pick from, and always picking, you know, what to take is an important, I guess, part of putting a competitive army together. And everyone has different ways to go about that. So, today we're joined by Jordan and Liam. How are you guys going?
Good, very good. Life is good. Life is busy.
Yeah.
Life is always very busy.
Liam, junior doctor, fucking Jordan, yeah. Jordan, policeman. I feel like I'm the only lazy one here.
Says Mr. Full-time dentist.
If you count all the 40K breaks, mate, I think it's part-time.
Living next to BGC is bad for you, man. That was a bad choice.
Oh, I live 40 metres away from Brisbane Gaming Collective. It's so good. Managed to wing that with my girlfriend. It was great. First thing we'll discuss, I guess, the reason we wanted to talk about list design again, because we talked about it probably about half a year ago, is a lot of our listeners are getting to the level where they're going to tournaments a lot more and they've got a starting army and, you know, we've had slow grow leagues and things and people
get
have built
your
up.
Wayne.
Oh, fuck. Did we have to mention Wayne again?
Yes, we did. It's the Wayne podcast.
The Wayne cast.
Oh, God. That sounds a bit sexual.
Oh, please go on. Sorry,
man. Just say Wayne cast three times really fast.
Well, he'll appear.
But yeah, I mean, for people who have, you know, built up a pool of models or a pool of units, and 8th edition is somewhat a collector's edition with things changing so much, it's really good to have a lot of things to choose from. We want to really talk about local metas and how to build for these kind of things. And the idea of this episode was also, you know, after any of us have a game, we sit there and chat for about 30 minutes on options of units, what we're doing on our next list. And we just wanted to almost publicize that chat for people who, you know, might not have as many competitive players in their gaming group, might not have that many games a week to look at this stuff. So I guess we'll start with you, Liam. How do you go about putting a list together? Because I know you're starting to become quite infamous for unique lists around Australia and the world.
I'll be honest, it does inflate the head a little bit when the Meganob list that I've been playing with for a while has actually become a net list. It's a thing. Like, I was linked by Lachlan Carter, I think, a YouTube video.
Yeah.
From a guy that was fucking funny. Like, the top three orc lists. And then this guy just goes, oh, there's the Australian Meganob list. And I'm just like, oh, that's me.
I'm pretty sure he said your name. He's like Liam Hackett from Australia.
Oh,
yeah.
Did he? Oh, that's sick. I watched
the video and I wasn't sure if you had been mentioned in it, if you knew about it, Liam. But I heard he's like, oh, I'm talking about the list. And then he goes, oh, and then there's this Meganob list from Australia, which was first piloted by Liam Hackett. And I'm like, I know that guy.
No, it was really cool because the first person, I guess, who like spoke to me about my list was Val Heffefinger from Canada. And he was sort of like, man, you got to pay attention to this Australian list. And I was like, oh, why do you think that? And he said, well, it's the first list where I don't have to move like 200 models, so I really like it. So it's the lazy man's list. But anyway, it's sort of taken off a little bit, and I'm a bit actually upset about that because now I'm not the person who plays this list. But to answer your question, Denith, I think when you build lists, I admit I don't have, like, I guess as regimented a process as I know some other players who go to tournaments do. For me, I build a list around a concept. So I say I want to make something work. How do I make it work? So like the example of it is like a Tau army. You want to have that core of firepower. That's what Tau do well. But you don't just take units that shoot. You have to take things that make the shooting work as a force. So you take drones, you take marker lights, you take character. Mm-hmm. Like the obvious example for me is the Meganob idea. So when I started playing Orcs, I played with Orc boys, but I don't like moving that many Orc boys. I also don't want to paint that many Orc boys. So I asked myself, do I think Meganobs can work? I said yes. But that doesn't mean you can like just take Meganobs and things that support Meganobs. You have to say to yourself, if the concept of this list is going to be a core of 2+ save models that hit in melee, how do you make that army work on the table? So you add in like tech elements, you add in screening elements, and you add in things that make the force work. So like a lot of armies will add in units that aren't necessarily good, in inverted commas. Like they're not going to go and blow up your opponent's Imperial Knight, but in combination with other parts, they make a more cohesive army. Mm-hmm. Like scouts in a Marine army.
Yeah.
Scouts are very unlikely to do a huge amount of damage to your opponent, but scouts are really bloody helpful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I agree. I think... Oh, sorry, keep going.
No, it's all good. I was going to say, like, what do you think about that? Like, what sort of things... For me, it's like the tech elements is what really makes an army an army.
Yeah, and I think the point you said about building around a concept is quite important in terms of you need to be able to ask yourself in a singles or team environment, what does your list actually do? Does it go out and hit people hard? Has it got really good staying power to get objectives? Does it have good board control? Can it deny space? Can it, you know, shut off certain other builds? So having that concept and being able to say, like, for example, your Meganobs army, what's the concept of that for you?
So for me, the concept of it is small, concentrated melee units. Just, I'm really sorry, Denise. My girlfriend is bullying me.
No, it's all right.
Go away. I'm sorry, please. Sorry. So basically, Denise, I'm sorry. She's poking me in the face. Anyway.
Tell her she's on live TV.
Oh, my God. Am, you're on TV. Do a flip.
Right,
so the concept for me was I wanted to have really concentrated melee damage. So because Meganobs are fairly expensive, but they're obviously like 3-wound models, 2+ save, have a power fist equivalent.
They're fucking ballistic, yeah.
And yeah, they're sick. And they're 35 points a model. But what I wanted was to have the damage part of my army take up very little of the board. The reason I made that choice was that I found a lot of the tables that I played on and a lot of the games I played against my friends, that big units were very cumbersome. So, like, Denise, look at the tables from events around Brisbane, for example, and also at tables like CanCon, for example. There's a reasonable amount of line-of-sight blocking terrain, but there's no single bits that could hide, like, 60 Orc boys, for example. You couldn't hide that many models.
Yeah.
But I can very easily hide 10 Meganobs in 2 ruins. That's really easy to do.
Yeah.
So, essentially, the premise that I started going with was, I'm really worried about Orc boys getting shot. How can I add damage to my army that I can actually keep safe until I need it?
Yeah, and look, that's a really smart way of playing, you know, an aggressive army in this game at the moment, because there are so many, I guess, if you look at horde lists, you look at board control lists, you've got to be able to hit precisely enough and hard enough to actually do work. And having, you know, 200 Orc boys on the table that just get shot down turn one, you just lose that attrition war from the get-go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's really, I guess, obviously this is going to sound really, really dickish.
Here it comes, a dickish statement.
Yeah, it is. You're ready for it. But that's kind of like the next level of writing a list, where you don't necessarily take the most obviously good option, but you take an option that works better when used correctly.
Yeah.
So like a prime example of that, and I will always go back to it, is you can tell very, very quickly when you play a really good Yunari player versus a not-so-great Yunari player who's maybe new to playing the Force. Mm-hmm. And the reason you can tell that is that it's how people use Shining Spears.
Yeah.
So obviously, I know Yanari's changed a lot. So I'm talking about how the old Soulbirth was. But this is just kind of a good example of that. So you'd kind of have people who'd Soulburst Reapers across, they'd shoot, they'd charge, they'd kill like 600 points of models, but the unit would then just die.
Mm-hmm.
That would kind of be, for me, like very rarely that would be worth it for the Yanari player because their army consists of like three units.
Yeah.
But a really skilled player, like I've watched Jeremy Martino, for example, play Yanari.
Mm-hmm.
When he's playing Yanari, he very often flies forwards, kills something, and then use the Soulburst to move back behind terrain and be safe. And he just does that for four or five turns. And then after he's done that, you realize that he built his list around staying safe.
Yes.
So when you make choices to build an army, don't just think about, you know, necessarily how something looks on paper. Really think about how you're going to use it on the table.
Yeah.
Like, I think, for example, Denise, the army that you played quite recently at Australian Team Championships,
mm-hmm.
I think is one of the premier examples of that.
Yeah.
So Denise played, give us a rundown just quickly again, Denise, of what you played.
So I played like the anti-Horde army, the Orc Nightmare. So except for Meganobs, you know, that gets a little bit harder, especially when Lee fucking piloting it. So I played five units of Death Watch veterans. Jordan's got a hard on right now. Yes, fully kitted, two termies and a bike each unit. I then had I had a sisters battalion with essentially 40-ish foot sisters. So it was just bodies in front of the Death Watch so they couldn't get charged or anything. And the Death Watch just did whatever they wanted, accompanied by Celestine and stuff. So yeah, I guess the concept of that army was anything with a high model count that is vulnerable to bolters is fucked. Any army that relies on wrapping me up is fucked because you can't wrap the Death Watch. Any army that relies on a bulk of psyche powers is fucked because the army has eight denies plus a stratagem deny. And any army that only relies on high AP shooting has a hard time because all the models have a three up or a four up invo. So that was a premise.
It was bloody beautiful.
Yeah, like when I got thrown into the old Orc matchup, it was amazing. Like, can't fight knights, can confirm, didn't bring a single las cannon or missile launcher or exorcist or anything. Cannot kill a knight. but yeah, like that was the concept. So yeah, I mean, if you have an idea, you can really, that helps design it rather than sometimes saying, let me just pick this unit because it has this role, this role, this role. Then you have like a jack of all trades army, but it's not quite synergizing well together. What do you think, Jordan? How do you design? Because you've recently put together a Death Watch and Blood Angels army, right? How do you design these forces?
So obviously, over the experience of 8th edition, we've seen the meta change lots and lots. But I think we're now kind of getting to a point where it is sitting pretty comfortably. Obviously, new armies when Orcs came in, they changed a few things and added some new additions. But the big thing we are seeing a lot of now is two ups.
Yep.
Like Mega Knobs and Knights. Knights are still here and Hordes are still here. So my old Blood Angels list had lots of auto cannons to deal with Custodes because Custodes were previously a really big thing. Yeah,
Custodes and Drakari, really, eh?
Exactly, yeah. And they were designed to deal with... Like, I had lots of auto cannons. I had, you know, good jump infantry. And then, you know, the odd knight would appear, or you'd just see full knightless, and that's where Captain Smash and the Sanguinary Guard with Power Fists were really good. The current list, I've gone, at the moment, I'm sitting at 1630 points with double battalion. I've got a Blood Angels battalion, a Death Watch battalion,
mm-hmm.
It's Smash, Sanguinaur. I've got three units of scouts, bare bones, and I've also got a nine-man Sanguinary Guard unit with five Power Fists and four swords.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and then I've got a Death Watch battalion with just a bare bones captain, Watchmaster, three units of Death Watch with bike, Vanguard vet, and six veterans with four storm shields. And his arm with storm bolts. So there's 36 shots for 229 points.
Yeah, nice.
That's re-rolling hits and re-rolling ones to wound if I pick the right tactic.
Yeah. And, like, anyone who's listening and wondering, like, you know, oh, no, Death Watch don't get special ammunition and beta bolter rule, Oh no, the army's dead. It's still fucking strong.
It is still very strong.
Yeah, it sure, like, okay, it can't kill 10 grotesques at 24 inches. Oh no. But like,
oh,
anything.
No, you have to actually play a game against.
Yeah. you have to actually move the Marines now. So, like, it's still viable, and I still think Death Watch is a really good addition to an Imperium army. Really fucking strong addition. Like, a small battalion of Death Watch, or a big battalion of Death Watch, can really complement a lot of things. Sorry, Jordan.
That's what I like. Like, you're looking at, you know, nearly 120 shots of bolters in a single turn if you can get all three units to shoot.
Yeah.
This, for me at the moment, is having a unit in orbit with the Watchmaster in orbit, two deep strike one unit, and then use the beacon event beacon to bring another unit forward, so there's 72 shots. 72 Wait. Shots of bolters rerolling foul hit rolls.
Wait, Jordan, just an aside, have you tried using the Osseous Key relic?
Osseous Key, is that the...
So it's got an aura, I think it's 6 or 9 inches aura of -1 to hit for any vehicles that enter that aura range. So, like, when a couple of, you know, Wayne Russell's DSC vultures roll up, it's like...
You could not help yourself then.
It's like, lol, hitting on fives. So, and on top of that, when it gets into combat with a vehicle, it gets an extra attack, and if you successfully hit on 2s rerolling 1s, you do D3 mortal wounds. So it's like, it's a sneaky little fuck-off relic that you can keep on a Watchmaster. But yeah, anyway.
It's... There's lots of things I do want to try with the list. Like I was saying earlier, the Sanguinary Guard are really good for a turn two.
Yeah.
Charge with the +1 attack from the Sanguinaur, making the Warlord, they're rerolling all failed hit rolls. I mean, I've used that unit earlier in 8th edition.
Yeah.
And I've always found it to be effective. I find it very good for killing lots of characters.
Mm-hmm.
Leaves their backfield exposed. There's nothing more terrifying than seeing a Sanguinary Guard bomb come down. Fight twice. I played James once, mate. I killed Princes, Ahriman, and like a Zangor enlightened in just a single phase, just from 12 inches and then declaring all of them and just charging and killing. And mate, you just wiped out literally an entire psychic phase.
James doesn't have a psychic phase anymore.
Bye bye, psychic phase.
Yeah.
So it was, they're really, I still like the unit. Obviously, it's going to be a test, but I've still got 370 points spare, which I drop a guard, I can add a knight in.
Yeah.
Which I want to try a knight, but then I'm really keen on trying infiltrators.
Oh, mate.
I think in the current meta, if Tau is still where they are right now, there's a lot of Noah around. They remove scouts so easily.
Jordan became a cyborg for
a moment. Jordan, you just cut out for a bit. Just say that again.
Oh, sorry, guys.
No, you're right.
I was just saying that scouts at the moment, they're still obviously quite strong in the meta, but I believe that Tau now, you know, with no line of sight, there's a lot of no line of sight weaponry getting around.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Move scouts too easily. But I believe infiltrators in cover with a 2+10 wounds... are a lot harder to move.
Oh, mate, make him Raven Guard and then drop smoke grenades for -2 to hit.
And that's the neg. That's smoke grenades turn one. If you're
playing a Latok, mate.
It's just cheesy. It's something I do want to try because it's also that 12-inch bubble.
Yeah.
Becomes so effective with just two units. You put them 24 inches apart from each other.
Yeah.
You're controlling, at that stage, you're then controlling nearly, what's that, 40, you're going 12 inches each side and then 24 in the middle, you're going 48 inches in cover of a square.
Oh, dude, I'm seriously considering taking to a doubles event, 3 max units of infiltrators and 3 Thunderfire cannons and a single hero. Like,
Jesus.
What are you?
Because it's just like, I own this. I have no punching power. I just have 3 full rerolling thud guns.
This is where Denith just hopes for the biggest line of sight ruins board he could possibly find.
Yeah, essentially. But nah, like, see, little stuff like Jordan, when you put together your Death Watch and Blood Angels list, what things, like, everyone's got like a tick sheet, right, when they make a list. What kind of concept or what was on your tick sheet when you put that list together?
So the tick sheet is, I need to get rid of screens. Mm-hmm. A Sanguinary Guard into their back line. I can get my Captain Smash into the back line. Those units that do the wealth of damage in combat.
Yeah.
Those screens, and that's where the Death Watch came in. Yeah. The Sanguinary Guard, they can deal with stuff like Mega Knobs. They can, Captain Smash can deal with Mega Knobs. I can also deal with Knights, which is also really big at the moment too. Mm, yeah. There are still other units. If people are very good at screening, do we want to, like, looters? Looters is still a problem at the moment because they're just the sheer amount of volume.
Yeah.
Don't know what you're talking about.
But the thing is, though, the second you get that looter unit to, like, 6 or 7 looters, it's like, you can just fucking ignore it. Just walk away from it.
Exactly. And for now, at the moment, it's just trying to... I'm putting units in that can deal with the stuff that we're seeing in the meta. We're still seeing hordes and we're still seeing knights.
Mm, yeah.
See wound units. Having Smash, obviously getting the assault phase, getting the charge phase, able to jump units again, massive. That's made it really, really big. There's going to be things that, you know, you can pull off again. So I can see jump infantry becoming really popular again, and I'm looking forward to using them again.
Yes.
But yeah,
absolutely,
I think...
Absolutely happy that Fly came back to the assault.
Oh, mate. Oh, dude. I'm fucking people up with the Saint again. Like, oh no,
so
four sisters are in front of Saint Celestine. She can't do anything.
Watch this.
Yeah.
I think designing a list was, I needed ways to deal with hordes. I think 3 units of Death Watch. I might even look at 4 units down the track.
Mm.
That, like I said, I've got 370 points left. So if any listeners want to make some suggestions on what I could spend the 370 points on, I'm more than happy. You know, put it up. Send us a message.
Big dicket, mate. Five units of Death Watch. Five units.
Oh, man, that, with those points, man, that's a Knight Gallant with an Iron Storm pod.
Yeah.
That is.
So I have thought of a Gallant. I thought of a Gallant with +1 attack. Run it up the table. Make it crashed. Run it up the table. Have something for people to shoot at while the rest of the army does what it wants.
Nah, dude,
going
just...
for the old crast in your ass strategy.
Crasty.
Nah, dude, just get a single Gallant and outflank it and watch people lose their fucking mind when you have Sanguinary Guard and a Knight.
Dude, you did that to me, Denise.
Oh, that was great.
Ages ago, you outflank it and I'm like, sick, I'm on a forest.
Yeah,
and you roll like 3 6s for the charge because you had like Terran or something.
Yeah,
and I was like, ah.
Sick. Well, I had +2 to charge, so I needed a 9 on 3 dice, picked the 2 highest, and I was like, sweet.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
I was like, kill, death grip, 3 characters dead.
I was like, great, my master plan. Oh, good. Would do again.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, I've told you, Jordan, to try and free up space for a Crass Crusader because that's just like, it's just annoying. It just forces people to fucking run at you, which is my style.
It's when you are picking like those individual elements for your list, you've got to consider like what your play style is like, and then if you're really building a list to be as competitive as you can be, you've got to work out what you enjoy playing and what you're good at playing, and then try and add as many of those elements into the army as is humanly possible.
Yeah.
So for me, like, I wasn't even the one who noticed this. It was Brian and Lachlan. They both made a joke about it when we were out to drinks at one point. They said that you look at the last 10 armies that I've played, and all of them have a central dense melee core that jumps across the table at you. Like, they're all the same. You look at the drone army I'm playing at the moment, the pus bus that Denise has experienced.
It's
you look
absolutely
at the Meganobs. You look at the Alaris army I play. It keeps going. Like,
yeah.
I always enjoy having that core that I can teleport across and charge, because I really love playing 40K in the charge and the fight phase. That's how I really enjoy playing that game, because there's so many shenanigans that I can pull, and
yeah.
I really enjoy that. But I also know of players, for example, that pick units for an entirely different reason. So our beloved, Daiso Baggins, Eric, he picks units largely based on his ability to board control with them. So not even just his Tyranids list that he's infamous for, but even when he was playing his Grey Knight, he picked units like Paladins because because they can take the middle of the board and zone out your opponent. They can stay safe and they can push your opponent away. He makes choices based on the movement phase. Equally, for example, Lachlan Carter. I know he builds a lot of lists about delivering Eldar firepower. So he takes units that deliver shooting damage and then builds a list around those units. Mm-hmm. I think everyone has something they want to make work, a phase of the game they want to make work, and they build a list around that.
And I think, that's exactly right. And I think the best thing you can do in 40K, if you want to get good at it, is play multiple armies, even if you just borrow your friend's army, because what you'll find is, like, as you play armies, even the first army you play might not fit your playstyle at all, you know. But if you bounce around to different things, you tend to, after you've picked about 2, 3, maybe 4 little things, you'll start to gravitate towards a certain kind of build or a certain playstyle or a certain, way you build your list, and that'll be your style, and you'll know that, you know. Like, I've jumped around all through Imperium, and now I'm sitting on the Sisters mech list, and I was like, yep, this is it. This is what I'm enjoying playing. It just,
good man.
It's a fucking wall. I'm going to call it border security. Nothing gets through it. It's fucking awesome.
Five damage.
Fuck you, Liam.
So, just for context, Denise and I played a game quite recently. I'm playing a list at the moment that's a little bit of a meme. It's got 27 plague drones, a great unclean one, and some Slaanesh characters, like the new mirror.
Yeah.
And we played a game, and I was on Denise turn 2, and we both underestimated, I think, how much damage the drones do. Because if you get a certain combination off on a 6 to wound, they do 5 damage every hit, which is pretty funny.
Yeah. So, like, a tank fails a 3-up armor save. Like, you don't want to reroll that because it's just, like, not worth it, and it's fucking half dead. It's like, whoa.
That's a melter gun. What just happened?
Yeah. You just got hit with, like, a freaking Paragon gauntlet or something.
Oh, and from that game as well, sorry, big shout-out to Silesque that killed, like, 1,000 points of Denise's army. That's the... I'm not even kidding, Jordan. It was unreal. It was actually ridiculous.
He's got this, like, the ability that stops people falling back in that Slaanesh army is insane, because then you just pile around those heroes and tag everything with the drones, and then, like, everything's stuck in combat, and then you're just feeding, like, one truck to the fucking blender every turn. Yeah, it's insane. But on the topic of, you know, play styles, when you've got that, just like Jordan has, that's actually our next topic. When you've got some points and you want to really pick that next unit for your army or that next little bit that slots in, I think for me there's two things I look at. Is number one, what the list itself is lacking, and what might be some really shocking matchups. Because, you know, let's say in my Death Watch list, for example, I had 5 units of Death Watch. I didn't, for that team event, I didn't think what would make this better against everything. For the team event, I thought, what would make this absolutely fuck up Orcs and GSC and any kind of Horde? And I put more anti-Horde in. Whether that was a good decision or not, I don't know. Hard to say. I think there's arguments on both sides. I personally would have changed some things. But
you did your idea and you did it well.
Yeah, and that was, I guess, the idea. Figured out later, though, that in the matchups process, that was a fucking disaster. Because everyone would dodge the Death Watch list and I'd be stuck at the bottom with Knights. So it was an absolute, like,
Jordan just giggling.
Yeah. So the first day,
I was like, first, if I was the other team, I'm like, look at this guy with all his Death Watch.
Yeah.
Give him some Knights.
Yeah. It's more like they'd put the super anti Horde, like the boogeyman up, and it would just get deflected. So, like, we used it to bully certain matchups in. Like, we used it to good effect in some rounds. But then, like, at the end of day one, I'm like, what's happening? And Lockie's like, that's what's happening. They're just dodging you and they're leaving you with the mech list at the end.
Yeah.
And it's like, so sometimes it's not good to go that way. But, you know, in general, I've always found it's better to, rather than make your greens really green with that last little pick, make your reds a little bit less red. That's, I guess, one thing I've considered. Like, have a bit more well-rounded. So it's not just... Are you eating an orange, Jordan?
What?
Jordan just said... Okay. Fuck, never mind. a tasty orange. Fuck you. But yes, so you get the red into a tasty orange. Just ways to, like, just pull that back a little bit more. The other thing I look at is...
Oh, I was just going to ask. Let me ask you this, Denis. How do you, as, you know, like, somebody who went to ATC and writes quite a lot of lit, how do you troubleshoot that? Like, how do you work that out?
fucking play 24/7, mate. Look,
that's really great advice. But yeah, if you can only play, I guess, like one or two games a week, which is still a lot for some people.
Yeah.
Let's say you can only play a game every fortnight.
Yeah. So what I would do in that situation is, you know, the second thing I was going to say is what unit would work best in my hands and with my playstyle. Because in my field of work, there's like a saying that's almost like, it's not about what the best, you know, treatment is sometimes. It's about the best treatment that you can do in your hands to offer someone. So like in some ways that applies in 40K, in that if a unit like Shining Spears, if I'm a full fucking retard and can't play Shining Spears, there's no point me including Shining Spears in my list. On top of that, if I really hate running, you know, a single knight in my guard army, I'm actively not going to do as well as someone who fucking loves it or it fits their style perfectly. So that's the one thing I was going to say. In terms of like the parameters I would use, Liam, I've started to look more at survivability parameters than like table ability parameters. So if I put a new unit on the table and let's say, for an example, in the Sisters Army, if I was looking for something that's anti-tank or anti-big shit, I'd be like, okay, what about Repentia that go in a Rhino, you know? And then I look at it and see if that Rhino dies, the Repentia are fucked. They have zero save. They've just got an invert and that's it.
I am back. Sorry about that.
Ah, that's all good. You didn't miss too much.
I went into a tunnel. I'm driving. Sorry about that.
Are you in your car? Holy shit.
Yeah.
All right. The Normal Blokes podcast is recording from a freeway.
It's on road.
Jesus. But yeah, I was just saying like, I've lent towards more survivability. So instead of that option of the Repentia, I would rather pick, you know, a couple of Exorcists for the army than a Rhino full of Repentia. In terms of, you know, those parameters, Liam, like you were saying, what would you use as deciding points for what you'd put into your army if you had just the points for one or two extra units?
Yeah, so one thing that I've done a few times that it was actually suggested by someone else that initially I thought was crazy talk, but then I tried it a few times and it worked really well, is try and play your army without those points. I mean, put the army on the table when, let's say you have 300 points spare and you're playing 2,000 points. Put your 1,700 point army on the table and then ask yourself after the game, what would have made the biggest difference after the game? Like what did I miss having the most?
Three Vindicators.
For example, Jordan, if you chuck your army on the table and then you say to me, oh shit, hang on, I cannot go right here, I think.
I would never say that, Liam.
That's a good point.
This is the best. We should all just get in our fucking cars and record podcasts.
Oh, man, I'm fucked. I'm actually fucked. All right, Jordan, you're not a policeman right now. I'm about to make an incredibly illegal right turn.
Why would you announce that to our three listeners?
Because I don't think Wayne's a policeman either.
And Wayne Primus and Wayne Magnus.
Wayne, my mum, and Luke's mum, our only three listeners. None of them are policemen.
Because, like, okay, so the thing is that let's say Jordan plays his army, and then immediately after the game, he goes, wow, like, if I had a gallant in my army, I would have absolutely fisted this fool. you can actually say to yourself, that's definitely what I want to spend the points on.
Yeah, exactly.
If after that, there's a few options, you got to sort of try it a bit. But for me, for example, like, I've played my orc army, and when I was really deciding if I wanted that tank buster unit in it, I actually just played 310 points down. I played without it, and I played against a whole bunch of meta armies. And then I was like, in this matchup, it would have been critical to have that. In this matchup, it would have been critical to have that. And after that, it was like definitive for me. I knew that's where I would spend my points.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at the moment. It's like, it's the first time in a while that I've had spare, and I'm going, what can I actually spend this on? There's so many units that I could add to the army to really add some power, but it's like, oh, do I? Right now, I've got ways to take on hordes, or maybe I could add more ways to take on hordes. Is to destroy knights. I've also got ways to take on mega knobs, not maybe not 20. I can maybe take 10 on at a time comfortably. Smash fighting twice.
Yeah. The other thing as well is that, and I think what's really important when, especially if you're new to coming to tournaments, my honest advice is think about things that are common in your area, but don't get obsessed by it. I find a lot of people, for example, like they're building an army and they go, oh, I need to be able to kill knights. Like I absolutely need to be able to kill knights. Well, do you? Like, you need to be able to fight knights. You need to be able to play the game against knights. But do you actually need enough las cannons to kill 4 or 5 big knights? No.
In a turn? No.
If you can do that in a turn, man, you've taken more than 2,000 points of las cannons. But, like...
Let me write a fucking list.
Oh, there's nothing but dev squads and Gillum, and I'll hit you.
Just heavy bolters, mate. That's all you need.
Jesus. You do actually need to think about some people's lists, but don't build armies to fight specific things. You obviously need to take a sort of all-comers army. Yeah. But temper that a little bit. Don't also expect your army to be good against everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to a tournament, even a singles event, and you say, oh, my army's got no bad matchups, everything's great, nothing's bad at all, you're likely going to have a bad time at that singles event. Because you won't have, you won't have set your expectations well. But also, you play differently if it's a hard matchup. And if you think everything's easy, you will make mistakes.
Yeah. And one thing that I've heard a lot of people saying, you know, in our local area and, you know, on other shows, is when you get quite good at reading what's good and reading what's going to do well in the players in your area, you build a list that can manage those players and can do well against those players, and you rely on your skill level to get you through the other games.
Awesome advice.
Yeah. So let's say, like,
for local events.
Yeah, like, look at someone like, we talk about him a lot, but look at Eric, you know, like, he has some obvious bad matchups with some of the Lissy players, like his Tyranids, like all the Gaunts and stuff. Like, you don't want to play like Bulk Guard with that. But they're the games that you leverage, you know, what you're good at. Like him versing Martino in GanCon on the stream was ballistic because that list tears apart Tyranids. But he was able to leverage what he was good at, which was, you know, moving, wrapping up a unit and just, like, irritating him to no end. Like, wrapping up a single hero. And that, like, that got him a big win. So
he literally annoyed him to death.
Yeah. Was it a watch captain or watch master or something that he wrapped up?
I can't remember.
But yeah, like that's the way that I've heard some people talk about it. And that's how I've started to approach a lot of games where, you know, I might think against a player I'm playing against, even if they've got a good army, if I can use what I'm good at and use my knowledge of the game to unconventionally beat them rather than run at them head on and just get tabled, you know, that's how I'd approach that.
Yeah. And I think one of the great things about it, it's pretty much, I presume it's true for everywhere. Obviously, my local tournament experience is only in Brisbane, where we live. But when you have a regular group of people who go to tournaments and you have that idea, it's also kind of funny when you see people who you're so used to playing a certain list rock up with a completely different army, because people have sometimes built entire ideas around beating that one person, and I've definitely seen that before.
It's a collector's edition, mate. Just rock up with a random army and fucking annoy everyone.
Dude, again, Eric is an excellent example with that, where he put the bloody post out to say, what army should I play? Because everyone just expected him to play.
Yeah. Oh, he's gone through another tunnel.
I haven't.
Oh, wait, sorry, say that again. Everyone expected him to play Nids.
I'm still here.
And then he didn't.
Yeah.
And then he didn't.
Well, hey, Liam, we're getting close to finishing up, so we'll just go through the... we had some listener questions on our Facebook post.
Did that happen?
Us being interactive. Yeah, bro.
Oh, we're like Oprah. We can hand out answers to everyone.
Who wants money?
So we've got a total of 3 questions, 2 of them being solid trolls, 1 of them being a reasonable question. So we'll start with a reasonable question by Alex Wilson, a local player in our area. Let me get this fucking page up. Alex asks, Would you try and always make a take all comers list or specific horde or knight counters when approaching tournaments or local comps? And I think we covered a bit of that just now.
We did.
Liam, would you like to summarize an answer to that question?
Depends what the tournament is.
Yes.
If you're going to a doubles or a team tournament, I would definitely try and specialize your list a little bit more. You do that because other players in the team can sort of make up for what your army's not great at. If you're going to a singles event, you probably should try and make your list more of an all-comers, but don't try to make it an absolute all-comers. If you do that, you're going to be spreading yourself too thin.
Yes.
I would like, for example, if you look at three archetypes, hordes, knights, and gunlines, try to say you can play two of those and play two of them really well.
Yes.
That's what I'd say.
Yeah. Because the other... Yeah, sorry, hordes, sorry, Jordan, you go.
Hordes, knights, and tau.
Mm.
that's literally what I was picturing as well.
And I've fallen into the trap of trying to account for everything and like putting too many fucking things in my basket, and then you just have a scattered blob of shit on the table that can't actually do anything. And like I've taken armies to events that I've actually that traveled a long distance for and realized that. I've been like, okay, fuck. I geared up for like three different things, but it doesn't actually kill either of them quite well. So having that awareness, and sometimes that just comes with, you know, experience of playing more games and experience of playing more events and using those units. But yeah, I would say, just like we said before, gear for the players, but be able to, you know, leverage skill in a certain way. Any other things for that one? I think we're good.
No, that's good. My answer to that. The answer is C.
Yeah. Thank you, Alex, for that question. The first of our two troll questions comes from Mikey Edwards. And Mikey asked, let me get it up, I've fucking closed it again. All that suspense and fucking nothing.
Sure.
Where's my succulent Chinese meal?
Mikey said, the quality of Night Spinners for Eldar, haha.
No!
In all honesty, pros and cons of taking units that have no LOS shooting in different style tournaments.
Okay, look, so it's not a troll question, it's an actual question.
Yeah, it's not a troll question at all. That's a completely reasonable question.
All right, guys, hit it.
Jordan, you fire away. I got the last one.
Okay. So obviously, we have armies like Night Spinners are doing this. We have SMS from Tau. Armies that I'm not really touching on that I don't see too much in the meta, because, I mean, you can't really count Eliminators. They just suck.
Give them a six-man unit and they'd be all right.
But those are popular units, and they've got abilities in ITC matchups to get rid of stuff. The screening. You push your screen up, hide it behind a building. No one can target it, but if you've got no LOS, you get rid of it. And, like, Wayne's a good example of it. Wayne was playing as Beanstalk Cult with lots of mortars. You know, able to get rid of screens, able to get rid of drones for Tau. Mm,
yeah.
Definitely a factor.
What makes Tau good is the durability, and drones make them durable.
Yeah.
Oath.
Celestine out of your list, Denise. It's like if they could just remove Celestine, you know, you're not getting the invul on all your tanks, and then you're just pissed off. You're just dirty.
Well, I kind of feel like Mikey's question more so stems from a, like, should you account for the types of terrain at the event you're going to?
And,
like,
yeah.
I don't think anyone's saying line of sight shooting, out of line of sight shooting is bad. God damn, it's saucy. But like,
one thing I will kind of say to out of line of sight shooting is it forces you into a certain like camper style, and sometimes you lose points on mobility and board control because of it.
Hmm. So, look. My answer to Mikey's question is just yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you should account for the terrain. And I think that's why, especially some of the bigger tournaments and some of the more competitive tournaments actually have in their players pack, you should expect this sort of terrain.
Yeah.
Like the ATC and the ETC have diagrams in the players pack saying, these are our light, these are our medium, and these are our heavy tables.
Yep.
You should expect things to look like this.
Yeah.
If you're going to your local RTT tournament and you know that it's going to be using, you know, your dad's uncle's best friend's dog's terrain, and it's basically just like Coke bottles sprayed, which is legit terrain, by the way, and that's pretty much it, then you can kind of say, look, I'm probably just going to take better quality, but I don't really need line of sight shooting. But if you're going to, and a prime example of this is the terrain that Joshua McGowan has, a person who runs an event around Brisbane. He ran Lords of War and contributed a lot of terrain to a large number of other events around Brisbane.
Yeah.
His terrain is very similar on multiple tables, but all of it is, that's good because you can sort of expect what, you know what to expect. And yeah. A lot of it is line of sight blocking. Mm-hmm. If you're going to a tournament like that and you know what to expect, definitely invest a little bit more if you can in out of line of sight shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Denise, what's the third question? I gotta go. I'm sorry.
Oh, mate, that's right. The third question is Wayne Russell asking us to... he's literally asking us to make people play lists that are bad against GSC. So what I would say to anyone listening, you know, Power Armor is really good. Power Armor is fucking strong. I think two up saves are going to save you. And they're apparently really bad against GSC. I don't know. I don't fucking know why.
It's okay, Wayne. I'll just play my orcs. It's all good, man. Don't worry, man. Oh, it's literally the worst game for me. His list with the three vultures, it just kills my whole army in like two turns.
Really?
It's literally.
Oh, vengeance unreal. For fucking Cadia.
Yeah, dude, it was unreal. We played this game at BGC, and I was sort of like, man, I got to do these like three things to even have a chance to play this game. Mm. And these three things happened exactly as I needed them to. And I'm never playing Wayne again after that because he's learned too much, and now he'll beat me.
Nice. But yeah, that's really it. I know today's chat was a bit segmented, but I think we needed to advance on our list building chat. And are you okay, Liam? Are you having a seizure?
I am okay. I'm just getting angry gestures from people. I have to go to dinner. Sorry.
No, it's all right. Bye, Liam.
Love you, listeners. Bye.
All right. Well. What we were going to say is, you know, we felt like doing this episode just as an addition to our previous list building episode. But before we finish, we just wanted to mention, you know, we've just clocked over our first year of recording. We're I think we're like 1 year and half a month or 1 year and a month, of the Normal Blokes. And, I don't know about you, Jordan, I've had a fucking sick time.
Mate, it's been a wild year. I've had a lot going on in the last 12 months, but having the podcast has been refreshing because it's kept me in the hobby. It's kept me interested. First time in 40K time, multiple armies. I've tried different lists.
Yeah.
This is very different for me, and it's been really enjoyable. So the podcast has been a lifesaver.
Yeah, and look, honestly,
in the hobby aspect.
Yeah, and all of us, we're quite passionate about getting the content out. We really love what we do. It does take a good amount of time and effort out of our week, but when we see people that, you know, comment on our stuff and we meet people saying, oh, I listened to that episode, it was awesome, it's really cool. And, you know, working in the future, we'll release some stuff on the Facebook page a bit more in the future, but we are working closely with Down Under Network. The Normal Blokes podcast is the Queensland team for Down Under Network for streaming events now. So we'll be doing a lot of their stuff. You'll see us on their stream. So look out for them on Twitch. We really want to keep going with our content, and we really want you guys to keep enjoying the stuff we do. And because of this, to help cover our costs, we've decided to open up a Patreon for our show. And it's not, you know, we're not going to wall off our content. We're not going to make you pay to listen to our episodes. All our podcast episodes will be free. We'd really appreciate anyone who wants to give anything to the show to help cover our costs. Because, of course, we have streaming costs. We have, the cost of streaming equipment. We have web hosting costs, things like that. And we really like what we're doing. And we want to give you all better content in the future as well. You know, better recorded content, better video content and everything. Down the track, we might consider launching some Patreon-exclusive stuff, but that's really down the pipeline, nothing at this stage. It's really just anyone who wants to help out, we'd really, really fucking appreciate it. Anything else, Jordan?
No, I think that's it, man. I think, as you have said, that this, you know, we do this obviously from the bottom of our hearts. We love doing the podcast. We did this, you know, off our own backs originally. And we've now 31 episodes in.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
For a little bit of assistance from the people that listen, you know, the people who do love hearing the podcast. You know, we've done with BrizCon, we did a bit of streaming.
Yeah.
Even being on that side of stream was really enjoyable as well. Mm. We just want people to be out of view and be more involved with it. And, you know, to become members and, you know, of Patreon just, and, you know, that means we can then help you produce more for you.
Yeah, and just a thing that we're working on, where we're currently working with Godhammer, and we're looking at some ideas of, you know, getting some recorded tutorials going. Me and Luke trialed a game out the other day when he played his ATC list, and I played my sister's trucks, and it came down to a draw at turn 7. If it finished turn 5 or 6, I think I would have been a couple points ahead, but it was really good. And in that recording, we actually talk a lot about tactics, and we want to try and cut that down and get that out. Probably if we can cut it down to under like 30 minutes, that'd be good, because no one wants to sit there watching 3 hours of shit.
guys want to, like, becoming members down the track as well, want to see us do, if you want us to do, you know, break down segments of just tactic videos or a codex review on units that you think, you know, you want us to talk about, let us know. This is what we love doing this stuff.
Yeah, and look, it gives us more fucking boring shit to talk about, so it's great, you know.
Exactly.
But look, our Patreon is www.patreon.com/thenormalworks. We'll pop a link on this episode. We'll pop a link on our Facebook as well. Currently, we're open to any donations. We have the Loose Change menu, which people can subscribe to for $2 a month. And we have the all-round good bloke option of $5 a month. And if you subscribe to that, we'll give you a shout-out on the show. And we are looking at, you know, down the track, looking at more content we can put up. But it really does help us cover some costs. And look, we'd be really appreciative of anyone who wants to jump on. But that's really it. We'll stop plugging ourselves. I hope you guys enjoyed the ep. Jordan, any final remarks?
No, it's been good recording again. And like I did say earlier, guys, I have 370 points spare to spend on this episode's post. Comment. Leave some ideas for me. I obviously have a full detachment available. So whether it be a knight, should deck out on guardsmen, mate, go for it. Give me some ideas and your reasons why.
Fucking how many assassins can you fit into that? I think you can nearly four assassins.
Mate, I've tried Space Wolf. I've tried Space Wolf Supreme Commands, Dark Angel Supreme Commands. I've tried Blood Angel, Dark Angel.
Oh, and bro.
Normal Space Marine Supreme Commands. I just want to try something new. But having that many points, as much as I really want to try a knight, I'm also not a piece of shit.
Jordan has collectively offended all our knight listeners.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. But look, I mean, moving forward, in the next month or so, we've got a lot on. We've got a total of three. One of them got cancelled, but two doubles events. I'll be going to both of them. One at Games Workshop Mount Gravatt, the other one at Warrior Lodge in July. We've also got Winter Warfest coming up in about 6 weeks' time, 1,500 points ETC-style mission. So I think our content between now and then might be gearing into that. But, thank you, everyone, for listening. Enjoy the rest of your week. See ya. Turn it up, let it start from block.